And we turn now to politics and our Friday political discussion. And we begin this week with news out of Washington, where Linda Kenyon covers politics for Illinois Public Media. Linda, it's been a minute. Welcome back to the show. Thanks for making the time.
It has been a minute, but it's good to be back.
I want to talk, and I sounded friendly there, but now I want to get serious. I want to talk about a comment former President Donald Trump recently made about potentially using the military in America against Americans. Let's listen to a clip.
I think the bigger problem is the enemy from within, not even the people that have come in and destroying our country. By the way, totally destroying our country. The towns, the villages, they're being inundated. But I don't think they're the problem in terms of Election Day. I think the bigger problem are the people from within. We have some very bad people. We have some sick people, radical left lunatics. And I think they're and it should be very easily handled by, if necessary, by National Guard, or if really necessary, by the military.
And we also have a clip of former President Trump's former Secretary of Defense responding to those comments on CNN.
And I saw over the summer of 2020 where President Trump and those around him wanted to use the National Guard in various capacities in cities such as Chicago and Portland and Seattle. And of course, there was a moment in time, as you just described, where he, on that early date in June, where he wanted to bring in active duty military as well. So that's what equally concerns me about his comment, would be the use of the military in these types of things. Now, the good news is I don't believe he has the authority under the law to use the military unless there was some type of civil disobedience or insurrection, in which case that would be use of the Insurrection Act. But otherwise, these other roles that he's described in the past are law enforcement, and that is prescribed under the Posse Comitatus Act, so he would not be able to use it. Now, I'm not a lawyer, but this would be a good discussion to have. But my sense is his inclination is to use the military in these situations, whereas my view is that that's a bad role for the military. It should only be law enforcement taking those actions.
All right, Linda, we need to take a break in about a minute and a half here. But the reason I wanted to bring these clips forward is I just worry that sometimes we get a little inured to some of the stranger or more extreme things that sometimes come out of the campaign trail, particularly the campaign of former President Trump. What reaction have you been hearing to these comments?
Well, we did hear from General Mark Milley, who was the former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. He himself has said that using the U.S. military against the American people is against the law. And as chairman of the Joint Chiefs, now retired, he would not have done that. You can, as a member of the military, stand up against an illegal order, although it's very, very hard to do that within the structure of the military. But nonetheless, this is a situation that the Democrats have called dangerous. Vice President Kamala Harris saying that the former president is increasingly unstable and unhinged, and that his plans to use the military against American citizens shows more than ever that he's out for unchecked power. And using these statements, saying that a second Trump term is a huge risk for America.
A huge risk for America. All right. We are going to continue with Linda Kenyon on the other side of a short break. This is The 21st Show. Please stay with us. It's The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are doing our Friday week in review, and we're talking now about politics. In a few minutes, we're going to take a deeper dive into some of the non-binding ballot questions that are confronting Illinois voters this year. But for now, we are continuing our conversation with Linda Kenyon, who covers Washington for Illinois Public Media. Linda, I do want to stick on this point of potentially, you know, former President Trump saying that he liked the idea of using potentially the military against the sort of enemy from within. He cited Adam Schiff, the California congressman and Senate candidate and Trump antagonist in the House, as somebody who he sort of categorized in these left-wing radicals, I think, is one of the phrases or something along those lines that he used. I've got to imagine that in any other context, this would be a sort of five alarm, you know, Japan surrenders worthy headline. You know, one imagines if Barack Obama or Kamala Harris said we should use the military to take care of right-wing enemies from within. And yet, as has happened at other times, people sort of process the news and move on. How do you sort of make decisions in your day-to-day coverage about what sorts of things to focus on here and when to let these things sort of pass over the plate?
Yeah, well, the shift has been quite obvious since Donald Trump ran for president of the United States the first time, and the media was basically trying to figure him out. How much do we pay attention to? How much do we brush off as Trump being Trump? Again, still trying to figure out who Trump actually was. And, you know, it has become sort of a desensitization process, not only for the media, but for the American public. A lot of people, you know, who are Trump supporters are saying, oh, he's just kidding around. He's being funny. And a lot of Democrats are saying, this is not funny. And Vice President Harris in particular saying, this is not funny. This is dangerous. And not just her, but other Democrats and a lot of political analysts, a lot of folks in public office saying, when Donald Trump says he's going to do something, or when he tells you who he is, you should believe him. And I don't think Trump is trying to be funny or entertaining when he talks about things like accusing Democrats of being Marxists, communists, fascists. Those are his words, not mine. He says they're sick. He says the Pelosi's, quote, these people, they're so sick and they're so evil. Now, those are pretty strong words, and words do have consequences, just like actions have consequences. And what it has done, and we have seen this increasingly in the intervening years, is that it has turned the American population against each other, that people have become a lot more raw, a lot more caustic in their discussions with each other, in their political races. And so if we shrug off and say, well, that's just Trump being Trump, again, you know, a lot of these things are not funny, and they do need to be taken seriously. And for a member of the media, like you, when Trump says something, we do have to cover it, but we also do have to explain that certain things might be either factually incorrect or, quite frankly, dangerous words.
Dangerous, such as, for example, saying that people can control the weather and steer hurricanes in order to exploit natural resources, which is something that some on the right have been in the Trump orbit have been saying about Hurricanes Helene and Milton. And we even saw an armed militia going after government aid workers, sort of disaster relief workers. And this comes back to Washington again, as so many things do, because there's also a budgetary question. And FEMA, which is the federal agency that coordinates disaster relief, apparently it is expected now to have enough money to last through Election Day. The Small Business Administration's funding program for disaster survivors, though, has run out of money, so it can't make new loan offers to people who've been affected by the hurricanes. And yet, House Speaker Mike Johnson has continued to say he does not intend to call lawmakers back to Washington before they're scheduled to return in mid-November. What have you heard when it comes to these questions of disaster relief funding?
You know, the Federal Emergency Management Agency is, by its very name alone, structured to deal with emergencies. The FEMA administrator has spoken to reporters in Washington. I was there a couple of times when she appeared in the White House press briefing room, and she said, look, we are built for this. We can handle more than one disaster at a time. And she said, we have the funding to do it. However, that funding is not infinite. And at some point, where there will be more emergencies, more disasters, and more need for the Federal Emergency Management Agency to step in and help people. And that's why Congress will need to provide more funding. Now, the House Speaker has not been averse to that. He says, we will deal with that, but we'll deal with it after the November election. It will be our first item of business, if you will. But when it comes to the Small Business Administration, President Biden has said, FEMA's director has said, and the head of Homeland Security has also said, the Small Business Administration is out of money. And these are the folks who are going to help business people who've lost their homes, who've lost their businesses, get back on their feet, part of the long-term recovery process. These folks do need some more federal funding. So with House Speaker Mike Johnson saying he's not going to call the House back in session to pass more funding, has sort of begun kind of a bit of a head shaking in Washington, because first of all, this is what the federal government is supposed to do, help the American people, especially in disasters. And second of all, the political calculation could possibly backfire even for Republicans who presently hold the control in the House, because a lot of red states are in dire need of help, because hurricanes do not check your political affiliation when they come sweeping through the state, nor do tornadoes.
Last thing I want to ask you about, and it relates to this, is there have also been people complaining about how FEMA has directed money to state and local governments dealing with an influx of asylum seekers. And there's this idea that that is taking money away from storm victims. Can you talk about just briefly how federal spending authority works? If the Congress allocates money to FEMA for one purpose, can the agency just decide to spend it on something else?
Yeah, that's one of the myths that FEMA has been trying very hard to dispel, and that the Biden administration has been trying very hard to dispel. No, the emergency money is not being used to help resettle migrants, to help resettle those who are in this country illegally. It is a separate situation entirely. And that money is meant for emergencies, for floods, hurricanes, tornadoes, wildfires, earthquakes. Those are funds that are specifically dedicated for that purpose, for emergencies. Any money for migrants is separate funding. And so that, again, is one of the things that the Biden administration and the FEMA people and the Homeland Security Secretary have said that are damaging to the those who are on the ground and are trying desperately to help people in dire need, along with other lies, they say, outright lies, that if you accept FEMA money, that they're going to take your land. Absolutely untrue, and a very damaging kind of statement to have out there. And it has led to some dangerous interactions between people who are on the ground working in earnest to help American citizens and the American citizens who are scared to take that help and in many ways lash out.
Oof. Well, we are cursed to live in interesting times. Linda Kenyon, thank you for helping us navigate through it. I appreciate it. Have a good weekend.
Thank you. You too.
If you're just joining us, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Early voting for the general election is underway across the 21st state. There is a lot for voters to consider, from the presidency all the way on down to local positions. But there are also three advisory policy questions on the ballot across Illinois. And depending on where you are, there may be other questions to consider as well. These, again, are advisory questions. There's no guarantee that they'll become law, even if the voters approve of them. They're basically polls in a way. But as the first thing voters see on the ballot, they are getting a lot of attention. So we're going to spend the rest of our Friday political roundtable talking about that. I am joined now again by Andrew Adams, who is a state government reporter based in Chicago. He wrote about this for Capital News Illinois. Andrew, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Also, Olivia Olander is a state government reporter in Chicago with the Tribune. Olivia, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So, Olivia, let's just briefly outline what each of these questions is asking.
Yeah, absolutely. So, as you said, three questions that folks statewide are going to see on their ballots. The first one is whether there should be a 3% tax on income above $1 million to fund property tax relief. It doesn't really specify what that would look like, but that's the general question. The next one is whether insurance should cover IVF treatments and other kind of similar fertility treatments without a limit on the number of them. Illinois is already sort of a leader on IVF insurance coverage, but this would be asking if they should take it even further. And then the last one is whether candidates who harass or threaten election workers should face civil penalties. This one obviously coming as there's been concerns about election security, concerns about people who might be following the incorrect notion that the election was stolen from former President Donald Trump, might try to interfere in the election in some way. These were all pushed by Democrats, so they kind of have like a Democratic slant to them and to who they would be expected to turn out. But those are the three questions that people will see.
Andrew, one of the reasons I got turned onto this is a story is I saw a TikTok lawyer make a video a few weeks ago, and I'm not going to name them. They seem to not realize, though, that these are just advisory questions. And this is not the first time that voters have been asked something like this. We've had constitutional amendments on the ballot in recent years, but these advisory questions, I guess the last time we had something like this was back in 2014. What happened with those?
That was another set of three ballot questions, again, non-binding. But the proponents of this set this year have been pointing to those as evidence of how these advisory questions can influence policy. Back in 2014, there was a question about raising the minimum wage, and that proceeded and, you know, some say informed the state going ahead and raising the minimum wage a few years later in 2019.
It was like four years later, right? Yeah.
When Governor
Pritzker. I'm a little cynical about the direct connection here, but yeah, please go ahead with what the supporters are saying.
Yeah, I mean, this is their argument of how this information might be used. It'll, you know, bolster attempts in the state house to, you know, move these policies. I'll note, though, that that property tax question, it's based on an increase on the income tax, which would require a constitutional amendment, kind of like the one that failed not that long ago.
Yeah, although, yeah, okay. And this is, that one is like basically identical to one that I think was on there 10 years ago. I'm gonna come out and say it. I think those questions were put on 10 years ago to try and increase Democratic turnout in what was going to be a Republican midterm year, 2014. And I kind of wonder if there's some ulterior motives happening now. And Olivia, you spoke with the sponsor, State Representative Jay Hoffman, who sponsored co-sponsored the legislation to put these on the ballot. Why these topics as opposed to the, you know, many, many other public policy questions that Illinois voters might be asked to think about?
Yeah, what Representative Hoffman said to me was these are issues that have obviously been top of mind for voters this year. These are all things that have come up either on the national level, as with IVF, or, you know, when we talk to state representative candidates, they're always talking about property taxes, and constituents care a lot about property taxes. These are all things, Hoffman said, that kind of come up all the time in political conversations. So that is, I think, the idea there. Certainly, though, opponents of how this was done and opponents of these questions overall, they're right there with you. They say this is for a Democratic turnout. This is for the Democratic base, preventing other questions from getting on the ballot. So that's definitely a pretty widespread take as well.
And Andrew, there's one other factor here, which is that the Illinois ballot only allows, or Illinois law only allows, for three questions of this sort on the ballot. And there were other groups trying to get questions with a very different political slant on the ballot as well, right? What did they think this is about?
Yeah, so there was an effort led by Jeannie Ives, who, you know, is kind of a longtime figure in conservative politics in Illinois. She and her group were trying to put a question about kind of gender-affirming care and parental notification for, you know, that kind of care for minors. Obviously, that's a big issue for conservative voters. And she says that these questions and adding three of them at once were an attempt to make sure that her efforts would not be successful.
They kind of swooped in and put them on the ballot before her sort of signature campaign could really get its work done. Okay.
Yeah.
Andrew, one other thing briefly that you touched on are some of the local referenda happening. And we rebroadcast earlier this week on our show our interview with some Madison County board members about separating from Cook County to form a new state in downstate Illinois. What do you understand the backers of these referenda, which I guess are now on, what, seven different counties this year? What are they hoping to get out of this?
There is a broad effort in kind of central and southern Illinois to add a question to ballots asking whether or not county boards should look into separating from Chicago and Cook County. And they say that kind of the cultural and political differences between downstate and Cook County are just so vast that there should be a serious conversation about, you know, breaking the state up into two. Now, that is a long shot of a political ideal of breaking up the state. That is almost never happened in American history, and certainly not in modern history. But they are interested in getting it into the conversation, I think.
Into the conversation, and I guess we did on our show, so there's that. Andrew Adams covers state government for Capital News Illinois. Olivia Olander is a state government reporter at the Chicago Tribune. Andrew, Olivia, thanks for sharing your reporting with us. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks, Brian.
More to come after a short break. We are going to be turning away from politics and heavier topics and talking about Illinois history. Fort Massac, our first state park in far, far southern Illinois. For 50 years now, they have had something called the Fort Massac Encampment. It looks at life when Illinois was part of the American frontier and even before. We're going to talk with one of the organizers of that and one of the reenactors. It's all coming up after a short break here on the 21st Show. Stay with us.